Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
I'll talk louder. I'll get into...
You're going to get all wound up.
I'm going to get into political consultant voice here. How about that? Yeah. Okay.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. You know, there are parts of campaigns and elections that play out openly. You know, like debates, press conferences, interviews, the things everyone sees. But a lot goes on behind the scenes, under the radar. Work done by campaigns for and against a candidate or a ballot measure that isn't really seen or known by the public. And one of those things is opposition research, or said another way, digging up dirt on your opponent. Sometimes that research is used in campaign mailers that end up in your mailbox at home, or they might pop up on ads online, or it can be a zinger used in a debate to embarrass or knock down an opponent. Here's an example of how it played out in one TV ad.
In which direction would John Kerry lead? Kerry voted for the Iraq War, opposed it, supported it, and now opposes it again. He voted for education reform and now opposes it. He claims he's against increasing Medicare premiums, but voted five times to do so. John Kerry, whichever way the wind blows.
Now, you might not know this about me, but a lot of years ago, before I became a journalist, I worked on campaigns. I started doing that when I was pretty young, and I was pretty low on the campaign team pecking order. And I remember in my first campaign, I was in my mid-20s, I think, a campaign consultant handed me a manila envelope. Inside was a police report that the campaign had dug up. It had to do with one of our opponent's children who got in trouble with the police and how this public official handled it. And I was told, hand deliver this to a reporter at the San Francisco Examiner. So I dutifully got on my motor scooter, drove to the Examiner office, got off my scooter, and didn't even take my helmet off because, frankly, I didn't want anybody to see me. And I dropped the envelope off with the guard in front and quickly left. Now, I don't even remember if the reporter did anything with the police report. I don't think they did. But, you know, it was like the late 1980s, so I'll just say I don't recall. But the truth is, that was my real one close encounter with oppo research. Can't say I'm proud of it, but, you know, like I said, I was a low-level campaign worker doing what I was asked to do without a lot of questions. Now I've come clean on that. And today we're going to take a deep dive into the world of oppo research and how campaigns use it. But first, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'll be joined by campaign consultant Eric Jay. You're listening to Political Breakdown.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. Well, as the 2024 election heats up, we're sure to start seeing and hearing negative ads on TV, radio, online, and on social media. Those attack ads are often the result of what's called opposition research, oppo for short. And one classic and pretty infamous campaign ad was dropped by the presidential campaign of George H.W. Bush in 1988. He was running against Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, and the ad alleged that Dukakis was soft on crime.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Now, that ad was infamous because it played on racist stereotypes. Willie Horton was black, but the ad was also very effective and memorable. I mean, here we are, 35 years later, talking about it. Opposition research is one of the so-called dark arts of politics, often used by people who run campaigns or advise candidates. People like Eric Jay, who is my guest today. Eric has worked in California politics for decades, running campaigns for statewide, local, and national offices. His firm, Storefront Political Media, has worked with a wide range of clients and issues. And Eric Jay, welcome back to Political Breakdown.
Good to be back, Scott.
So first of all, just give me your thoughts. That ad, it was, like I said, 35 years ago. What goes through your mind as you listen to that?
Well, first of all, thanks for that confession earlier. I think the political gods can absolve you all these years
later. Yeah, statute of limitations, right?
It sounds to me like you've been carrying some guilt, which you can let go right now. I think that that ad was memorable, but I seriously doubt that that information changed the outcome of that presidential race very much. We were both young people at the time when Dukakis here in San Francisco stood up at his acceptance speech and pledged to raise our taxes. The election was probably lost at that moment.
And they didn't need any opposition research
didn't,
for that.
They didn't. He supplied his own opposition research. And even at that time, I don't think that many voters in the United States doubted that Democrats had a more progressive stance on criminal justice than Republicans. So that wasn't some revelation for voters. It was a reminder. And to the extent that Republicans are pretty good at staying on message, and up until recently, our party, my party, the Democratic Party, less so, they reminded voters again and again that our party was the party of criminal justice reform and raising your taxes. But they didn't need Willie Horton to do that. That was a particularly good way of doing it. But again, I doubt it changed the outcome at all. In fact, I know it didn't change the outcome at all because voters already knew that information.
Yeah. And that was, of course, a pretty much a landslide election. Is that fair to say that that ad, though, came from opposition research? Certainly has all the hallmarks of that.
Absolutely, it came. And again, back in the day, the opposition researchers used to say campaigns are won and lost in the library. Huh. And it sounds good, and it might have been true once. I don't think it's true anymore because I don't think voters are reading that much, particularly at the top of the ticket in highly partisan elections. So let's say President Biden, for example, and his son. Opposition research, they found a laptop full of all kinds of interesting information. And despite some efforts perhaps to suppress that information, it was known to everybody through this thing called the internet that we have right now. And so people already had that information, but I can tell you, it didn't bother me. I was going to vote for Joe Biden regardless of what the opposition researchers came up with because of the choice I had in that election and the coming election. So in these top-of-the-ticket races, voters in America right now are voting on partisan labels, and they're really not getting too far beyond that. Now, in races where there's less information, is it a dark art to have more information about candidates, or is it a public benefit?
Yeah, you be the judge.
I've got two words for you, George Santos.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a case, obviously, where nobody really did their oppo research until after he got elected. He lied about every aspect of his life, and now he's been kicked out of the House.
And in that instance, again, in a low information environment or in a primary environment where partisanship isn't really at issue, would you vote for the Republican who had a drunk driving charge versus the Republican who didn't? Perhaps you would. So opposition research or research in general, because it's not just opposition research. As you remember, one of the first things a smart candidate does is she or he does research on themselves. So they prepare for what an opponent might say and be ready to answer any question with a truthful and quick answer. Yeah. Because journalists like Scott Schaefer call up and they say, hey, I'm going to print it. 5 o'clock and it's 4:45 and you better have the answer ready.
Yeah.
So the first step in this process is to know thyself. After that, do you want to know where a candidate stands? Are they lying? Is there an act of moral turpitude? Is there something voters would care about? Sometimes there are, sometimes they're not. But less and less, voters are starting to dismiss issues that used to bother people.
Yeah.
So let's take the Christian community. doesn't seem to bother them too much that Donald Trump has been divorced multiple times and had multiple affairs.
Well, the Hollywood Access tape, or the Access Hollywood tape in 2016.
I doubt it changed one vote.
Yeah. But you're saying, it seems, that the less information you have about a candidate, and everybody knew Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, so the lower down the ballot you go, the more important these kinds of things could be?
Absolutely. And if you go into elections that are not partisan, it tends to have more information because, again, that partisan signal tends to drown out virtually all other information in American politics right now. But say a Board of Supervisors race or a city council race or a nonpartisan mayoral race, that kind of information is going to be more important. And it's not just negative. Okay, again, we try to get information that is going to change minds and illuminate our arguments.
Well, at the beginning, you said, you know, there's an old saying that campaigns are won and lost in the library, which, of course, is, you know, maybe what people had to do way back when things were on microfiche, but maybe they still are. I mean, how has the process of doing that research changed?
It's changed dramatically. Again, 30 years ago, someone went to the courthouse. Okay, 30 years ago, someone went to the library. 30 years ago, you had to go to the state house or the state capitol and look at the voting records. All that information is now available instantaneously. A chatbot AI could gather it for you in a matter of seconds, although
that raises a point about accuracy.
Yeah, you probably should check the accuracy.
Or Wikipedia, for that matter.
Exactly. But it's available much faster, but also it's available to anyone who knows how to Google anything. So the mediation that we used to have, okay, we had researchers who would hand those envelopes to consultants, who would hand them to junior staffers, who would hand them to reporters. There was a series of layers, and some of that was good. For example, that reporter decided not to print that information about someone's child.
Good call.
Good call. Right. They were expressing some editorial judgment. And unfortunately, these days, Google or Bing or any of these search engines don't express that editorial judgment. They essentially give you the information, even if it's not relevant to the decision.
So you said that the impact of negative ads or, you know, opposition research is less. It's less of an impact today. And we mentioned Donald Trump as a kind of prime example. Why is that? Is it because we've become just so tribal, and the vote is really based on the R or the D, or is it something else?
It's a number of reasons. First, as we were already discussing, in partisan races, we are so partisan now, or hyper-partisan, that we simply vote against the other tribe. And there are almost no ticket splitters anymore. When we grew up in politics and first entered politics, there was a pretty big group of people. On our side, we called them Reagan Democrats. These are Democrats who had voted for Ronald Reagan and were perhaps more socially conservative than our party had become. That doesn't exist really anymore. That's very rare, and there are very few ticket splitters. It's a hyper-partisan environment. And that's the chief reason. Well, two, I think the second reason is there's so much distrust right now. If you read something, all you need to do is say, well, it's a deep fake. And people are more likely to believe that something is made up than to believe it's true by quite a significant margin.
Are they also willing to dismiss things because they have such a low esteem of elected officials and they assume everyone's a crook or doing drugs or cheating on their spouse?
Yes, although journalists aren't quite that far behind on that slippery slope, Scott. People don't really trust the media anymore, and they certainly don't trust media that is not speaking to their partisanship. I think the final answer, final reason really, is mechanical. It used to be that the Chronicle would run something, and then all of the TV and radio would follow what the Chronicle ran. And there was a surround sound, and almost everyone got that information. Well, now SF Standard can run something. If SF Standard runs it, the San Francisco Examiner probably won't. Mm. And the San Francisco Chronicle probably won't.
Because they're competitors.
They're competitors. And so the dial is so atomized, the information sources, there are so many of them that most of this actually doesn't actually even break through to most voters. Hmm. Now,
what about, you know, you said it doesn't matter, you know, the party affiliation matters more. But, in California, we have the top two primary mm-hmm. now for most races. And we're going to have congressional races and others where we have a lot of Democrats running. So might a negative ad, and we've already seen some, I think, that were based on, you know, just opposition research on voting or public statements one candidate or another has made. Does it not matter? Like, or what impact does it have then when you've got multiple people of the same party running?
I'm not going to say it has no impact, but I'm going to say with a great deal of confidence, it has a small impact. The appetite for outrage used to be much greater because we weren't confronted with outrage every hour of every day. And voters shrug most of this off. Reporters like it. It's good fun. It's gossip. It's chisme. But do voters really care? No, they don't.
Yeah. Well, I want to play something from 2010, of course. Going back a ways, that was the race for governor, Jerry Brown, who was the attorney general at the time. And this is before we had the top two. And it was a Republican and a Democrat. The Republican was CEO Meg Whitman. And she had been making a big issue of illegal immigration and deporting people who were here illegally. And then right before a debate in Fresno, a debate that was sponsored by the Spanish language TV network Univision, stories began appearing about Whitman having hired a housekeeper who was here without documents and firing her. And this came up in a debate between Whitman and Brown. Here's a clip of that.
Jerry, you know, you should be ashamed. You and your surrogates put her deportation at risk. You put her out there, and you should be ashamed for sacrificing Nikki Diaz on the altar of your political ambitions.
Don't run for governor if you can't stand up on your own 2 feet and say, hey, I made a mistake.
Eric J., first of all, your thoughts about that encounter. I remember when that came down, and we'll talk about how that got out into the news environment. But what are your thoughts about that as a campaign play? You know, you're a consultant. That's pretty good.
It's great. I appreciate it. And it definitely threw her back on her heels. That's for sure. Even if you watch that video of that debate, literally she recoiled and she never recovered. In that time or afterwards. That said, I don't think voters woke up afterwards and said, oh my, politicians can be hypocrites. I think they already thought that. And Jerry Brown is going to go down in California history as one of the greatest, if not the greatest governors we've ever had.
The second time.
Second time. A few times. A part of the
yeah.
first time, too.
He'd have some votes for the first time.
Yeah, there were some highlights and perhaps low lights. But no, he's going to be remembered. They're going to put up statues to Jerry Brown versus Meg Whitman. I don't think it changed the
who has left the Republican Party.
Yeah, I don't think it changed the outcome. Now, here's where it makes a difference. And this is a very insider view of this. Excuse me,
That's
but I'll share
here.
It if you care. It's psychological warfare. To win, Meg Whitman had to have voters thinking about taxes all day long. She actually probably had to have them thinking about what they would call illegal immigration and we would call immigration all day long. There were a few issues where she probably was in greater agreement with the electorate than Jerry Brown. And she needed to maintain message discipline to have those issues always be top of mind. Now, when you're explaining, you're losing. When you're reacting, you're losing. When you're defending, you're not attacking. And in politics these days, unless you're attacking, you're losing.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, so that was a case where I tried to find an ad around that, and I couldn't find one. And I remember it first surfaced in the media, which means mm-hmm. some researcher, some campaign, some interest group handed it to the LA Times or whoever, and then it became public, and then Jerry Brown and Whitman had to talk about it in the debate, and so it became sort of an ongoing story in the media based not on an ad that people were talking about like the Willie Horton ad, but because it was a story. What is there a preference, do you think, from a campaign point of view to have it be sort of not have your fingerprints on it necessarily and have it becoming, you know, just in the media as opposed to from a campaign?
Well, first of all, that was right out of a playbook. And the story you told, I don't know if there was a debate coming up, but there probably was a debate coming up. You do your research, you decide what matters, you drop it to a reporter the day before or the day of the debate, and lo and behold, it's a topic of the debate. So it's not you leaking information about your opponent. It's these august reporters asking serious questions that they are then required to answer. So that is quite typical, and I'm sure that's what happened in the Brown debate, in addition to being a great governor.
We actually asked Jerry Brown about that when we did an oral history with him, and he claimed to know nothing about it. He thought it came from a union, which it could have. I mean, it could have come from like SEIU or something. I'm not saying it did, but it could have. But I'd be surprised if the governor's campaign didn't know about it.
He has no recollection of that at this time, and that's fair enough. But it's also atypical. The way it works is you try to get this information to reporters so they can use it as a zinger in a debate. And in fact, there is a symbiotic relationship between consultants and reporters. It used to be there were a lot more reporters. They didn't have to file as much. They could go do their own research. They went to the library themselves. They weren't being replaced by robots. These days, reporters are busy. There are not that many of them. They don't have a lot of time. And consultants give reporters this information. Now, good reporters still decide whether or not they're going to use it, and good reporters check it. But a great deal of what you read in the newspaper or see online originally came from an interest group through the representative of that interest group, people called political consultants like myself.
Yeah. Well, you even see, and it's incredibly lazy, but on some TV stations local, they'll use video that was handed to them by a pharmaceutical company or some other interest group because they don't have the wherewithal, the time, the resources to go out and shoot something on their own. So that's a whole other story. Right. I'm just wondering, is there a piece of, you know, Oppo research that ended up in a campaign? We talked about some big ones that are well known, but that where you saw the result and you thought, oh, that's really good. I wish I had thought of that, or that's, you know, really clever, or that you learned something from.
I think I've been involved now with thousands of campaigns, and what I have learned is that opposition research drives your opponent to ground. Years ago, when I worked for my mentor, Clint Riley, he was doing a campaign against Melvin Belli's wife. And we had some opposition research, and it indicated that she had not been telling the truth. We were up late at night. We did a piece of mail. We took Belli and we turned it to Belli's. And we sent it out.
And her name was Leah, right?
Leah.
Did you turn that into liar?
Yeah.
L-I-A-R?
Yeah. So it was mean. It was mean. We made fun of her name, and we applied a moniker to her that was memorable. Was she going to win? Probably not. But she stopped campaigning because she was ashamed.
Wow.
Now, that was a moment in which people still felt shame in politics. It's a little less prevalent these days. So even on a psychological level, it has less impact, but it still continues to, believe me, it doesn't feel good to these politicians. I've sat in the room with them when this information comes out, and it lowers their energy level and their desire to go out and walk a precinct or make some fundraising calls or do something else that would be productive for their campaign.
Eric Jay, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Good to be here.
And that's a wrap for Wednesday, March 20th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.